Part one of the Zerodha special was all about the story of one of India's most iconic fintech organizations. But part two is much more about the man behind it. That's Nitin Kamath. Also, if you're looking to get some quality financial education, if you're looking to get better at your own personal finance game, this is going to be a game-changing episode for you. While we spoke in detail about how to manage your own money and the nature of stock markets, towards the end of the episode, we also spoke about a little bit about happiness and the nature of life. Nitin Kamath is one of the most well-read, knowledgeable people that I've come across in my life. Lots to learn from this guy. Enjoy yourself on part two of the Zerodha special of The Ranveer Show. For a 24-year-old who's just started earning money, what would you say is a good financial strategy? Like, how should they plan their personal finances? Like, how would you do it if you were 24 in 2020?
Yeah. So, if I had no background in finance, right, and I'm just trying to do this to optimize my earnings from my savings, I would just do, you know, I would pick up three mutual funds and do a SIP on it, right? You know, which is, you know, if say I'm saving 10,000 rupees a month, I take 3,000 rupees each and put it in three different, you know, mutual funds. That's what I would do if I had no financial background. Now, if, you know, if I'm one of those who has a little bit of, you know, financial background or enjoy finance or enjoy tracking companies and businesses and what they do, you know, like, you need to have that liking. You know, I mean, I'm the one who picks up in Economic Times, or am I the one who look at, say, a Mumbai or a Bangalore Mirror, right? I mean, in the sense, you know, if I'm the guy who's going to pick up Economic Times, I think the best way to learn finance is by investing in the stock markets, right? Because, you know, when you invest in a stock, you're tracking everything that can potentially make a difference to it, right? And you learn so much about, not just about business, about, you know, finance, about life and, you know, business, you know, what promoters are doing to grow the business. You know, I mean, you can learn 10 times more than what you learn from, say, doing an MBA or whatever, just by putting your money into some stocks, right? And tracking what they're doing as a business. So, but then, yeah, it makes sense to do it only if you really like all of that. I mean, if you're if you don't like it, I think mutual fund SIP is good. Yeah, if you like finance, as I said, you know, take the money, invest into 5-10 stocks and start tracking them, you know, closely, and then see how it goes, you know. But the basic rule in all of this is that you know, never put yourself in a situation where you can blow out a lot of money, like, you know. So risk, you know, being conservative on risk is the only real way to make money in life. You know, this whole I will hit out of the park, you know, it works for 1 out of 1 million person, but then, you know, it's very tough to be that 1 out of 1 million. You know, it's I mean, you know, not everyone can, you know, you can't really, you know, as I said, there's stupid amounts of luck required to be that 1 in 1 million.
You said something interesting, and this forces me to digress away a little bit from the world of finance. What is your opinion on MBAs in 2020? Because you're an engineering student, basically, in your core. And I still see the engineer alive in you, in like the way you think and all that, dude. For, like, again, a 24-year-old, who's figuring, okay, dude, should I do an MBA? Should I stay active in the world and just learn by working in a startup, by working in the stock market? What's your opinion on MBAs in the modern day?
See, the thing is, I never really, you know, did my engineering properly. So, no, I mean, I don't think I qualify really to be called an engineer. You know, so MBA, I don't think there is really any use case of an MBA degree today. I mean, I think, you know, MBA makes sense to go build a network. I mean, I look at it more like that. I don't know if really you're going to learn. I think you're going to learn a lot more working in a startup or investing in stocks than you learn in an MBA, right? But what an MBA does, though, is, you know, if you go and do it in a really good school, you know, I have friends who have done from great schools, and they just build this stupid network of people, right? As in, you know, you're an IIM Bangalore student, you know, you can just go after this, you know, entire IMB, like a 20-year-old guy, right? And then, and he will have some feeling for you, and he will, you know, it's a good way to network. And I think MBA is more that, you know, I mean, even, even if you look at all the folks of rich, kids of rich folks, who send their kids to Stanford and Harvard, I think it's more to build those networks than to
than to really the education,
because education today is free. I mean, you can learn anything and everything for free today. I don't think there is. I mean, if you've seen what's happening in the US with this COVID thing, right? They've gone online. They're teaching, like whatever is available on YouTube, they're probably teaching, charging you $50,000 a year, right? So, I think MBA is good for building network, improving your soft skills. It's, how to present, how to sell, stuff like that. I don't really know if it's something, special just to learn. I don't know if they really teach you something that can't be learned for free otherwise.
Yeah, 100%. Coming back to the world of finance, little tough question. In the year 2100, what do you think the world of finance will look like? Will it be similar to what we're doing right now, but just more advanced? What do you think the future simulation of the world of finance is?
No, I mean, I've just now finished Sapiens, the book. And so I might have a bias because I've just read that book and how world's been so drastically changing from 40 years back to today, right? As in, it's a brilliant book, if someone wants to read it. I think the way the world's changing, right? I don't know if anyone can really predict, right? This whole thing around artificial intelligence and, I don't know what 2050 will be, right? Because, I think this whole humankind, of whatever, tens of thousands of years, right? Where nothing happened really, right? And then you had this capitalism which took over the world in the 1920th century, which is just, it's just the world is evolving so fast in the last 1500 years. And what was working for you 5 years back, is redundant today. So I don't even know. I mean, I have no clue. A lot of people ask me, Nitin, what is your 5-year plan for Zerodha? I said, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow morning, so because it's evolving so fast, it's just changing, and I think what this world needs is people who can adapt quickly. Right. And I think the way to adapt quickly is to remain lean if you're a business, because, you have, high amounts of debt, high amounts of, all these technical debts of sorts. What happens is it becomes tough to, maneuver as a business. And even as an individual, I think the constant effort for everyone has to be just keep learning about whatever new is happening, because whatever new is happening can suddenly take over your world without even realizing about it. Right. And so it's tough to say, I don't know how, 2100 will look like. I don't even know if, humans will find a way to keep the planet alive till then. So let's...
I completely... For all you know, finance might happen on the planet Mars.
Mars or something like that. Yeah.
Coming back to the present day, selfish question, because it's not every day that you get access to Nitin Kamath. Now, for someone who's not really interested in the world of finance, and for someone, say, who is working in a startup, who's so busy thinking about the startup that they can't really think of, okay, I want to step into the world of stock markets. Would you suggest a portfolio management service firm as a good option? And what's your general opinion on PMS firms? Because I've seen that generally online, whenever influencers speak about portfolio management services, the stock market nerds will come on and say, hey, don't do this. This is wrong. You're making a mistake. So what's your opinion on it?
Well, I think people who don't have the bandwidth should go seek help, right? Either, I don't think, it's a dangerous game, because, if it's your savings and earnings, which is there at stake, I don't think it makes sense to be penny wise, pound foolish types, I mean, find an advisor who can help you, find a mutual fund manager or find a portfolio manager. I mean, if there's no time, I don't think you should just take, that's a weird thing that I've seen, right? As in, when it comes to money. Like, I know folks will go bargain, if they want to buy tomatoes, for example, or say they want to buy a refrigerator, right? They'll go research, they will find, they'll spend hours and hours. And then suddenly they want to buy a stock, some friend said somewhere, this stock will go up, buy it, he bought it in 2 seconds. And I'm like, dude, I mean, how, you know, why is that behavior so different? You know, so which is you buy a refrigerator, you're putting so much research and effort. Why not for a, you know, when you're putting your life savings at stake? It's very weird. You know, I don't know what is the reason behind it, but most people behave like that, right? You know, if I right now tell you to buy a stock, you might actually buy it, right? The odds of that happening is quite high without really doing any kind of research. But if I tell you, you know what, you should buy this refrigerator, you'll probably go do research before buying it, right? So it's, I think I'm from that. I think what India needs right now, which is missing, and one of the reasons for US markets to be so successful is because of, the US enabled this whole advisory ecosystem, right? Over the last 30, 40 years in the US, what has happened is the businesses have grown because of professional advisors. Like in India, it has grown because of distributors. Okay, the difference here is this, right? An advisor doesn't make any money from the manufacturer, right? For example, if I sell you a mutual fund, if I'm an advisor, I don't make any money from the guy who's making mutual funds. I can charge you an advisory fees. A distributor earns from the manufacturer, but he doesn't earn anything from you. Now, you know, right, there's a conflict of interest, right? Because if I am distributing to you, I'll distribute what is going to make me more money than what is better for you, right? Now, if I'm an advisor, I know that you will pay me a fees only if I make you some money, right? So the US, the way it's worked in the last 30, 40 years, it's all grown out of professional advisory ecosystem. In India, it's always through distributors. You know, your bank manager is selling you insurance, mutual funds, you know, some other guy is distributing, and all of these guys are doing it because they have revenue targets, right? And to me, the revenue targets, they're just selling you something, you know. I don't know if it's in your best interest or not. The reason that is like that in India is that Indians don't like to pay an advisory fees, right? Because, if I ask you for 100 rupees for giving this advice, like, why, dude? You know, why are you asking? But if I make 1,000 rupees from, you know, the manufacturer, you have no problem because you don't see it going from you. Right. So, So in the US, what has happened is these professional advisors, they have almost created professional investors over the last 30, 40 years. Right. Because, you know, if I'm your advisor, you know, say we keep talking to each other, say every once in a month, once in a quarter, I keep telling you what's the right strategy, etc. You will automatically become better as a person. Right. You will understand more about the markets, etc. And that's what's happened in the US. You know, you suddenly have people are so much more professional when it comes to money than Indians. You know, so.
And then they pass it on to their children. And even the children grow up in like this financially educated world. So, thanks for the financial education. I feel like I'm much more financially educated just after this podcast, man. But I also strongly feel that, and I'm not talking about wealth or being rich, but the obvious thought is just having a great financial safety net sets you up for a happier future. And keeping that in mind, dude, that's honestly why the world of personal finances exists in the first place. Because why do we exist as human beings? It's to have that little thread of peace throughout your life. You know that, okay, if my family is going through something, I've got the money to take care of it. If my kid wants to study abroad, I've got, you know, that ability to do that. Which is my question to you. Now, dude, okay, the way you worked in Zerodha or you worked in the stock market, you've got to know about the world of finance. The world of podcasting allows you to deep dive into people's minds, okay? And when I have conversations this deep, I can tell a lot about the person I'm speaking to. You're someone who's got like a lot of peace, man. Like there's too much peace just in like your thought process. Do you meditate? Is this something from your childhood? Is it because you found your purpose in life? What's happening in your own head as a guy?
I think it's more doing something that you love doing. I think that's like that purpose, right? Finding the purpose is probably the most important side to this. Because for a while I thought, if I get this much money in my bank, I will, I'll be very happy. But I think it's not about money for sure. You know, that was me when I was young. You know, I had like this rupee goal in my mind, and I thought, if I had this much rupee goal, I'm gonna quit everything, go by the beach, and have a shack and all of that. I think what I get, I think I'm extremely satisfied about is just just, you know, waking up every day, having a purpose of saying, you know, this is what I want to do. And knowing that I'm creating some kind of an impact there, you know, I'm knowing that, you know, every day I'm working hard, you know, maybe the world of investing in India is getting better in some form. And also I think this is, it's a learning. I mean, I think, you know, if you had asked me 10 years back the same question, I would have probably answered something else. But the, you know, the big learnings of my life is from trading, you know, which is very weird as such. You know, a lot of people, you know, trading for a living is one of the toughest things to do, you know, putting food on the table, you know, trading actively, et cetera. And this whole learning of, like I said earlier, right, just, you know, being stoic, et cetera, I realized that that's the only way to survive as a trader. Like if I am impulsive, I am excitable, I am, you know, I react for everything. You know, if I do it, there's no way I can survive the volatility of trading. And somehow, you know, that having traded for 10, 12 years before starting Zerodha, I think it just, you know, all that learnings from trading has also come into building business. Like, you know, like one thing I think personally is I never care about what is not in my control, right? As in, like, I don't really worry about it. And usually, you know, I'm trying to always factor in the maximum I can lose at any point of time. And I try to make peace with it. And then once I make peace with it, right, as in once you've made peace with your worst case outcome in life, everything else seems like almost like a bonus, right? And generally, you know, like some strategies like that, you know, like if you ask folks who work with me in the office, you know, if there's an issue, the first thing is to tell me what's the worst case outcome of this. Right. And I'm trying to just make peace with it, because then, you know, once you've made peace with it, you're also very, you know, in a rational place to, you know, you're in a place to take rational decisions. Right. Because, you know, there's also a lot of physiology and stuff like that. As in, you know, if your heart's pumping blood fast, you know, your thinking capacity reduces. Right. I mean, you're your sharpest when you're the calmest. Right. And, you know, I've realized personally that works for me. I don't know what works for everyone, but personally, just at any time there's an issue, crisis, or anything in life, you know, just, you know, factor in the worst case outcome, make peace with it. Then you are calm to just go and fight it out. So, yeah, stuff like that. You know, I mean, a lot of these learnings are from, because, you know, I traded for such a long period of time.
The way I look at it, I feel like you found your purpose, which is kind of creating things within the stock market, understanding the stock market. At the same time, you've understood, oh shit, I've got to be stoic, I've got to be calm. Therefore, you've become calm in order to adapt yourself, in order to become the best version of yourself, in order to achieve your purpose. And that's rubbed off on the rest of your life. So, dude, I gotta ask you a little bit about your personal life, because what impact does all this knowledge and, you know, this stimulation you get from the financial world, what does it have on your family life, and what's your family life like?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, me, my brother, my wife, my kid, my son, my folks, we all stay together, you know, and, you know, we're like a big family staying together. And there's never work spoken with the family, actually, you know, so even me and my brother. So even Nikhil today manages a hedge fund, and he manages the risk management at Zerodha. So we've done completely different things in the sense. So we have never had to, we never really talk about business at all, because what I'm doing is growing the business, building the business, broking business is very different to what he is doing. So at home, et cetera, there's hardly ever talk of money, business and any of that, because I personally think, you know, it's just, you know, the family time should be just family time. You know, I don't know if mixing business really works well.
What do you do when those little financial numbers and little stock market theories sprout up in your head at home? Like, how do you block that out and then think of cricket or whatever?
Oh no, I mean that's a trouble. That's a problem. You know, I mean, I don't know when I slept peacefully. You know, so like I have that problem. I mean, so I have a Google Keep thing, right? As in where I keep taking notes. You know, random times in the middle of the note, I'm getting up and taking notes. And you know, I don't think it's just about finance. It's about business itself. Just business ideas creeping. You know, you can do this, you can do that. I mean, no, I you know, it's very tough. You know, like, but I think my wife, you know, she's kind of adjusted to this way of life. So she has a problem that I'm always distracted, but but then But then, yeah, we've been like, you know, like I said earlier, so we started dating when I was in the call center. So she's been part of this whole journey for the last 17, 18 years. So she's realized the reason whatever I am today is because of the way I was, you know, passionate about business and about stock markets, etc. So, yeah, so she kind of gets it. My folks have always been supportive right from when I started trading. So, yeah, so it's been quite okay, actually, you know. So,
dude, they say that the curse of entrepreneurship when it comes to marriage is that you start treating your marriage like a startup. So is that true? And my honest question to you, man, is if your wife stayed with you from call center to now, what were your ups and downs and how did you navigate through it?
Yeah. No, I mean, so the thing is, my wife has a big problem with me being stoic. She's like, you never react, you know, and you probably don't react because you don't love me, you know, but that's the other flip side, right? I mean, you react, you have a problem. You don't react, you have a problem. But so what happened was in between, she became a cabin crew. She was an air hostess for a while in Air Deccan and then for a while in Singapore Airlines, 4 or 5 years. So, you know, we also had like a 5-6 year long distance kind of relationship in between. So we've actually gone through everything. So today, she's a fitness freak. So, you know, I mean, she makes me work out at least 1.5 hours a day. And so that's really our real bonding time, you know. So because once business starts, it's just, the shit doesn't end, you know. It's just continuous work, right? And I think this whole post-COVID world has made it even more worse, right? As in, like, even, you know, this thing is said in that Sapiens book again, which is, you know, every time there is something that has changed in the world, which is supposed to give you more time, it's actually taken away time from you, right? Right from agriculture revolution to, you know, like even now, right? I mean, you would have assumed that work from home means, you know, you're saving time traveling, you're saving time, you know, doing all the stupid meetings, etc. But I don't know. I mean, there's zero time. So it's just eaten away that much time. And it's, I think the way we've gotten over a lot of these ups and downs is, you know, like, again, the whole, you know, being stoic, you know, like, for me, she's like, I don't have to win the fight in the house, you know. I mean, I have a war to fight outside, right? You know, in the house, you know, so, you know, every day I had to get up and I had to go fight a battle as a business. So, you know, I'm okay losing that fight every day at the house, you know. So, and that's something that I've made peace with, and she knows about it, is that, you know, she wins every argument. So there's not a single argument where I have won. So, as I said, you know, I think I don't know if every relationship can be this way, but the way I've gotten through this is by letting her win every single fight and every single argument, you know. So.
Dude, with entrepreneurs, again, one more curse is that you're perpetually in this growth gear, you know, like, for example, when you're talking about stocks as a learning platform, like, you can learn about the world and life through stocks. So your gears has perpetually been learning. And I'm sure that that's what you're doing through business also. Now, is it true that your partner kind of needs to match up to you in terms of growth gears? Like, it's okay if they don't grow in the same domain you're growing in, but they're growing in their own thing. Like you said, she's big in fitness. So does that define?
No, I think, you know, with us, we are exact opposites. You know, whatever she likes and, you know, except for this fitness where there's a crossover, you know, all her likings, or if, you know, we can never sit and watch a movie together because I don't like what she watches, or she doesn't like what I watch. So there is no, you know, we're almost opposites in a way. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's one thing, you know, that works for everyone, right? I think every relationship is different. And with us, as I said, you know, I think she's made a lot of adjustments as well with me, you know, with me being constantly distracted and this whole rush of wanting to, you know, constantly keep doing something, you know, which is a problem, you know, if you think about it in a relationship, right? If your partner is not giving you 100% attention, while we're having a dinner, I might be thinking of some, you know, some business idea, right? As in, it just doesn't stop. The brain doesn't stop working. And I think that's a problem with, I've seen with a lot of my entrepreneur friends as well, right? They're constantly thinking of growing a business. It's, Growing is, it's not even about money, right? I think we're all, you know, I know a lot of really successful guys who have a lot of money in the bank accounts, and it's not even money. I think, you know, once you have, you know, X amount of money above that, it makes no difference to you, you know? I mean, unless, you know, some guy who's got ambitions to buy a yacht or a, you know, or a private jet and stuff like that, you know, so then there is never ending. But, you know, once you know that, you know, you have made enough to, you know, to have your lifestyle for the rest of your life covered, you know, then, you know, you get to this point where money just makes, you know, doesn't move the needle at all, right? And then it becomes this, how do I get better as a product? How do I, you know, how do I do something impactful? So all of those things starts running in your mind then.
Dude, outside perspective, you're a really blessed guy, man. Like, you found your vibe really early in life. You kept at it. There's definitely things that you have done right in terms of keeping your learning active, your hard work active, you know, staying, you're like a super humble guy. But do you ever consider that aspect of things where, like, you have a sense of God, you have a sense of blessings showered upon you? Like, do you think about that kind of stuff?
I don't really believe in a God. I don't really think, you know, there's God, but I am a big believer in this whole good karma thing, you know, is that you do good things come back to you. I mean, maybe that is God, right? As in, it's I don't really think going to a temple, etc., is a thing, you know. But I'm constantly trying to help every single person I can, and I'm doing it maybe with a little bit of selfish interest, also knowing that, you know,
just doing that is like a super spiritual thing, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, that through your actions, you're like changing the world.
Correct. Yeah. So I mean, yeah. So that's maybe, you know, my thing. Otherwise, I don't really believe that there is one God or whatever, you know. So,
okay, two last questions. The first question is, what is the best and worst aspect of your life right now?
Okay, so, you know, the worst is just this constant, you know, not being able to shut my mind, right? Because I struggle to sleep. I'm a jack of all trades. I play music. I play all kinds of sports. I do everything, and I love all of that. You know, in the sense, the fact that I can't give time to it, even though I can, is, you know, is very, you know, very depressing. You know, it's just because, you know, I thought, you know, that, you know, if I made X amount of money in my life, I would be doing a lot of things which I can do, but I'm not able to do, which doesn't really bode well. The best thing is this whole satisfaction. It's just being that content in life, right? As in, there's extreme amount of contentment, you know, in the sense nothing moves now. You know, I there was a while where I went and bought a lot of watches, and I bought cars, I did all of that shit. Right? And then then you realize that, dude, none of this shit means anything, right? As in, but I don't know if you can really get there without doing it, you know, as in, like, you know, a lot of rich folks saying that, you know what, money is not important, right? I mean, you're saying it after making money, right? It's you know, it's a different thing to say when you've done everything and saying it without doing anything. But I think this whole being that, like, right now, what I enjoy most in my life is just this whole contentment. You know?
The last question is, if someone, you know, stripped you down, took away all your assets, and you're left with 0 rupees, what would be your, like, strategy over the next year? With all your knowledge, as in, you've gained all these skills, you've gained all this know-how, but if someone just took away all your money, what would you do?
So the thing is, like, one, intellectually, right, I think one of the reasons I've grown in my life is because I've attempted a lot of things. Right. So I've learned 2-3 musical instruments. I've played 2-3 kinds of sports. I've done fitness certification courses when I was younger. I play poker almost semi-professionally. I've learned magic tricks. So the thing is, I've sold on the phone. I think selling is probably the most important skill to have. I don't enjoy selling in person, but I really enjoy doing it, you know, behind the scene kinds, you know, on the phone or on through blogs and etc. So I think these skills, you know, even if everything becomes zero, I think will help, you know, just restart this whole thing. And the first thing that I'd probably do is just, you know, in a time like this, if tomorrow morning I didn't have anything, I'll probably teach people stock markets, you know, because I think there are, you know, teach people on stock markets and managing money well, because I don't think there are too many people who are teaching it to be done the right way. You know, so.
Beautiful. I think you should, dude. Like, the kind of impact you'd create with that would just be like something the country hasn't seen. Is there any last, you know, book recommendations / movie recommendations you'd like to leave the youth of the country with? You'd like to say that, yo, listen, this is what helped me, man. Read this early in life, whether that's finance or just life in general. What are your final recommendations for the youth?
Books, if you're thinking of, you know, trading the markets, Market Wizards by Jack Schwalbe. You know, it's a bunch of interviews. It's almost very similar to how, you know, people watch podcasts. You know, so Jack Schwager went, met 20 of the best traders in the world, and he made a book out of it, like interviews. So it's brilliant. So if anyone wants to, you know, start trading, I think that's a place to get started. On life itself, the last book I've read this like a few times now, Sapiens by, and this is just mind blowing. It's just the evolution of humankind. And, you know, you just, you know, realize how, you know, like just world has evolved over the last 5, 10,000, 15,000 years. So, and for people who are thinking of starting up, I mean, like I said, right at the start, I think before you start up, you know, I mean, you know, you suddenly get these ideas that you think you can go build business. I'd say first go build core competency, find a job in an industry which is doing something very similar to what, you know, your idea is. Then ask the same question after, you know, spending that time, which is, are you still passionate about the original idea? And if you are, I think India is probably the next big superpower in the world. And, you know, I think if there's any place in the world where, you know, people should be starting businesses, I think it's India. Right? The opportunity is here.
Yeah, right?
So if you find that idea, you build your core competency, I think you should take the plunge, because India needs good entrepreneurs. I mean, I think we need so many people, good people to come build good businesses in this country, because that's the only way we will create employment, right?
Completely.
Right? And yeah, if there's some takeaway from my life, which I think has helped me significantly, like I said, one, don't focus about money. Money is an outcome, you know, it's not really, you know, it can't be the goal of sorts, you know. The goal has to be just, you know, building, you know, right processes, be around good people, do good things, and money, hopefully, if luck smiles on you, comes.
Beautiful, dude. I have to be selfish with you a little bit, man. Because you've got such a wide-eyed view of all the industries, specifically speaking about India, what do you think is the future of my industry, which is content? Like, and how is it perceived on the outside? Because honestly, what I hear is, see, media entrepreneurs tend to be a little bit vain, a little bit kind of, again, for lack of a better word, self-obsessed, you know, very like, oh, we are the shit, we are whatever. But what do you see as the future of this industry? Like social media, content, digital stuff.
No, I was never on social media for a long time. You know, I mean, I had a Facebook account and it was just with family and friends. I got on Twitter actively a few months back. And the reason was because I think this whole rush of business, I forgot that, you know, such a powerful media has got built. You know, like I forgot that, you know, like you can influence. I mean, if there are things to share, I think social media is the right place to go and do it today, right? I don't think people are reading newspapers and, you know, I mean, and all of that. You know, what you're doing is actually is I think where the future is. Right? What I'm not sure about is if India is intellectually ready for long form content. Right? You know, it just. Like, you know, will people actually, you know, the guys who are listening to this, do they actually stick through 30, 45 minutes to, I don't know, you know, and try to actually learn something out of it? I don't know if there are enough intellectual, you know, enough people trying to grow intellectually in this country like that, right? Because there's so much distraction, right? I mean, how do you choose between this versus watching an episode on Netflix or something, right? As in, like, you know, you're competing with something like that, right? I don't know what is the size of that market. Maybe you have a better idea of it. But for short form content, you know, your tweets and, you know, like 50, you know, the 30 seconds to 1 minute video or this TikTok videos, you know, I mean, there is a market for sure, right? As in there is,
yeah.
You know, there's people will watch that stuff, you know, but I don't know. I mean, this whole, like, you know, what are you doing? The Joe Rogan kinds, I don't know if there are those tens of millions of Indians who will actually sit through and consume this, at least as of now, you know, But maybe, you know, like this whole COVID, you know, what's also done is I think people are getting more competitive. They understand, you know, it's a law of the jungle, right? As in the fittest one is going to survive, right? And
exactly.
Right? So if you want, you know, to do well professionally, you need to be educated. You need to know more. Right? I mean, that realization I can see, you know, kind of kicking in, right? As in, like right now I'm in a resort and one of these guys was asking me about stock markets and it's never happened. You know, I mean, I've never come into a resort and someone not asking me what stocks to buy. You know, he's asking me questions about like, you know, what you're asking, you know, what's portfolio management, what is stuff like that, right? And I'm like, dude, you know, there is some change happening around us. You know, this whole COVID is pushing people to say that, you know, I need to get better in life to survive this. You know, this, you know, otherwise the number of jobs will reduce, only the fittest ones will, you know, be able to continue to have those jobs, you know. So maybe, you know, that can in a way benefit, you know, people like you as well, you know.
Yeah. So I honestly, the answer to the question about long form is that this is raw material, what you and me are building like right now. And then it's a sales and design game. So for example, I'll take each of your questions and create a mini video out of it. That mini video stays online over time. So it's a content piece. And the flip side is that even if this conversation, like a 2 hour long conversation, totally gets 100,000 views in its lifetime, which it won't. It's going to cross millions and millions of views over like 10 years. But even if it crosses 100,000, there will be 10,000 people out of that 100,000 who'll apply a lot of the shit somewhere in their life and make their family's lives better. Yeah. So this is like high impact content, man.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
And honestly, this realization of creating impactful content and directly impacting people's lives took away the seductive aspect of money from my life. The same thing. Like, I think I grew up with those intentions of, oh, cars or whatever. And then once I realized, oh shit, I've landed up in a job where I can talk to a teenager and change his mindset, that just changed shit up for me.
Nice.
So that's
nice.
That's the world on this side. But I want to thank you, man. This was a gorgeous, rich podcast. I'm sure it's going to impact a lot of people. Of course, I'll be linking all your handles down below. Even if you aren't active on social media, I'll link Zerodha's handles.
Sure.
But forget that you were a podcast guest. I appreciate this on a human level. Thank you for all the stuff you shared, man. Really appreciate it.
Cheers. Nice.
For sure.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm glad.